You're listening to the What's Happening podcast with Gary Watts.
Good morning, everybody. I'm here with Robin Boudreau with No Foot Too Small. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good. Thanks
for
having
me. Are you excited about this?
I'm so excited.
Good. So tell us a little bit about, I wasn't aware of No Foot Too Small until my daughters brought it up last fall. And basically said, Dad, we need to contribute toward this organization. I said, well, what is it? And they probably told me. And then again, I probably wasn't listening. but you said it, not me. Yeah, I know. What an incredible thing that you do. But before we get into No Foot Too Small, tell us about Robin Boudreau. Tell us about where you grew up, school, all the little things that went on with Robin.
You bet. So I grew up in Marshfield, Wisconsin. So I'm really loving this green. Got the Green Bay Packer vibe going on right now.
All right. God's country, right?
God's country. Is there anything better than Lambeau Field?
Why did we get rid of Aaron Jones, by the way? Did you see that?
I don't know. We could talk about another Aaron, too, but maybe not
right,
today.
Right.
So grew up in Wisconsin, went to school at the University of Minnesota, and then made our way here in 2003. So
if you went to school in Minnesota, you betcha. Oh, you know.
You betcha. Don't even get me started.
Okay. Sorry.
Bag, road, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
So you went to Minnesota.
Went to University of Minnesota. Okay. Came to Iowa in 2003. Kept that Minnesota phone number because I thought for sure we were going back to Minneapolis, right? but Iowa City just really sucked us in. So planted here, started a family, and we just love Iowa City.
MedTech. Tell me about MedTech. You were in that, right?
Yes. Actually, I went to school for family marriage therapy.
Ooh.
Interestingly enough.
How is that? How does that? Is that fun?
I loved it.
Really?
I loved it. I'm still probably the counselor for quite a few folks, but.
And not before you get married, after you get married.
Yes. Well, I don't know if I'm great at, applying what I've learned today, but went to school for family marriage therapy, but had always worked in sales. And so when I moved to Iowa City, I actually ended up with Pfizer for about 3 years and then moved on to Medtronic for almost 15. So I was in medical device sales in spine surgery for more than a decade.
Oh, the hardware that goes into spine,
yes,
huh?
Yes.
You were right in with the surgeons?
Oh, I loved it.
You're right there in the action, right? Yep. So you settled in Iowa City. So tell us about your family. Tell us about your story here.
You bet.
You're here now. You went to Minnesota, MedTech sales, right?
Yep. Loved my career. Ryan, my husband, and I decided it was time to start a family. So in 2011, I was pregnant with my first child, which was our daughter, Bella. She was an easy, we'll call it, pregnancy. Arrived beautiful, healthy, you name it. A couple years later, decided, well, it's time to have another one, right?
Right.
Expect the same ride because, I mean, really, that's just the way it goes, right? We don't expect that something's going to go wrong.
Right.
And so pregnant with our second child, and my girlfriend, Abby, does ultrasound. And so she had said, come on in. We'll do what we would then call a gender check, right? We're going to find out, are we having a boy or a girl this time? So we go into that office on a cold Monday night in December, January timeframe, and she starts scanning. And we learn right away that we're having a boy. And to know me is to know that I had no idea what I was going to do with a boy, right? So I'm immediately like, oh my goodness, we're having a boy. But as the scan continues, we quickly learn that Bo suffers from severe acrania. So because of my experience in spine and my husband's experience in neuroscience, you know, we're looking at the ultrasound and we can see immediately that Bo is missing most of his skull. And from what I recall, it looked as if his brain was beginning to form what would be outside his forehead.
And how many weeks did you see this?
We were almost halfway.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So, obviously, the three of us, Abby, Ryan, and I, really just kind of shut down. We were alone in an office. There were no physicians to call in, right? We couldn't ask anybody what this meant. And so we had to go home and wait. So we went home that night, called the University of Iowa Hospital the next morning. My physician, Dr. Rachel Mawson, is an incredible human. And when she could get out of the OR, she got on the phone with me and said, you know, we're going to have to get you up here to meet with fetal genetics. And so it was another couple of days later. I'll tell you that that waiting was torture. I'm not a patient person to begin with.
How long did you wait?
About 2.5 days, which is a long time.
Yeah.
So we finally get up, and having been in medical sales. Having been in the OR in surgery, I'm very familiar with what happens at the University of Iowa. I've seen a lot of people in a room, right? Well, now it's my turn to be laying on that table, right? It was just a cold table, big ultrasound screen, and it felt like everybody was coming in the room. Physicians, residents, medical students, techs, you name it. And Bo was up on the screen, and they talked amongst themselves and essentially just listed out everything that was wrong with our son. And ultimately, the physician, and I don't remember who she was, turned and looked at us and said, "I'm really sorry, but the extent of these defects leave your son incompatible with life." And I really don't have words for what that meant, like what that felt like in the moment, other than I was completely devastated. We were both completely devastated. And so we met with our physicians later, and essentially they said, "Robin, you need to deliver this baby sooner than later." Well, ultimately, his heart was going to stop, right? And this just his body was not forming correctly. And so it was January 11th, 2013, when we delivered our son, Bo, and handed him over to heaven.
How old was Bo?
Well, he died upon birth. So, right. Yeah.
But how many weeks did you carry him?
We were about almost 18 weeks.
18 weeks,
17,
okay.
18 weeks, yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So,
which is interesting because you had a physician on your podcast not too long ago, and 21 weeks is viable. Right.
Yeah.
They're saving babies at 21 weeks at the University of Iowa, which is incredible.
Yeah.
But those are, you know, relatively healthy.
Yeah, it was
babies.
Dr. McNamara. He's in charge of neonatal at the University of Iowa, the department. So, which is incredibly growing, and it's a lot of beds. And
right.
We talked about Children's Hospital, everything. It's great.
He was terrific. Fortunately for Ryan and I, our physicians were terrific. And, Dr. Massa and Dr. Hardy Fairbanks looked at me and said, "Robin, you need to get pregnant again right away." And I'm thinking, are you crazy? Right?
Wow.
Like, and my body's supposed to heal and I'm supposed to wait and I'm supposed to do all these things. And they said, "No, for your mental health, it would be important for you to get pregnant again right away." And so fortunately for us, 8 weeks later, I was pregnant again. And we come to find out I was having another boy. And so while we delivered Bo January 11th of 2013, we delivered our son Ben December 16th of 2013.
Wow.
So I was pregnant for a long
Lucky
time.
Lucky 13.
Right?
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Kind of.
It's crazy to think that that's been a decade.
Wow. It's amazing. Well, for those out there that are listening and they've never experienced childbirth, it's definitely a miracle.
It's incredible.
It's amazing.
It's incredible.
There's so much going on in childbirth.
Right.
I heard the other day that I think fingerprints are 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Heartbeat is at not a lot, 10 weeks?
It's very early.
Really early.
Yeah.
And now they can deliver babies at 23, 24 weeks at the University of Iowa.
Absolutely.
So it's just truly amazing. There's so many things forming. They can hear you. So if you haven't experienced childbirth, you're missing something.
Yep.
And then to have something where, you know, Bo had, you know, had to deliver and passed away is just, I can't imagine.
No.
So you've turned a really difficult time. Tell us what you've done since then with Bo.
Well, that's a long story.
So, speaking of
fingerprints and heartbeats and all the things, this necklace that I wear every day is Bo's footprint. So this is true to scale, to size. After I had delivered him, I just searched for that one thing that I could have to remember him, right? Because I didn't have photos. I didn't have him. What was it? And so I took his footprint and I sent it off to an artist on the East Coast. So she recreated a mold of his foot. Created this necklace and I wear it every day. But I don't know. I just remember in those days following, I thought, where's the proof that he was here? Right? You know, you have nothing. So this is a reminder that he is with me every day. I'm not a tattoo person. You could probably guess that. But all the shiny jewelry, we can do this. So how did we get here? Well, I am a gatherer. I like to host parties. I like to bring people together. And so as we were coming upon what would have been Bo's first birthday, I looked at my husband and I said, well, we should throw a party, right? Like if he were here, we would host a party just like it's what we would do for our earthly children. And he said, okay, that sounds great. Start planning your party. But in that planning process, I thought, I remember this is a decade ago. Nobody talks about pregnancy and infant loss. Today, I think we could argue that there are celebrities who are coming out and talking about this, right? The dialogue is there, but at the time there wasn't. And so I thought, how could we possibly be the only family to have experienced something like this? And so I wrote our story, as well as an open invitation to anybody in our community who had experienced any type of pregnancy and infant loss, right? It didn't matter to me if that was early miscarriage, second trimester, full-term stillbirth, SIDS, you name it. Mm-hmm. Whatever your story, come and join us. So that first event was hosted in September of 2014, and we welcomed close to 100 guests and raised $10,000. Mm-hmm. And remember, at the time, I was working full-time for Medtronic. I thought that was a one-time thing, right? We're going to host this party. We're going to celebrate what had been his first birthday, donate some money, and off we go. Well, at the end of the night, a couple of families walk up to me and they say, "You're going to do this again, right?" I'm like, "Sure, I can host a party once a year." And so we do that for 3 years, right? We host this annual celebration of angels. Well, after 3 years, we had raised almost $100,000 and gifted it all to the March of Dimes. Mm. Their mission, serving prematurity, is important. It's very important. But it just really started to weigh on me that we weren't doing anything for our families who'd experienced loss, right? The babies aren't here. There's no amount of research that's going to bring them back, right? So what is it that we can do that would serve them? And that's really when I went back to the University of Iowa and I said, I want to build a birthing and bereavement suite, a labor and delivery suite designed for families who don't get to bring their babies home, right? I was in a procedure room. Mm. Right. I mean, it's not the space that you want to deliver a baby in.
How much time did you have with Bo?
None.
You had no time. None.
That's because hard. He was so severely deformed. Mm-hmm. And I really don't have any regrets about it. I really trusted them. They looked at me and mm-hmm. they said, "Robin, you don't want to remember him like this."
Okay.
Right. And so I don't know that everybody would have made that decision, but that was the right decision for me.
And the bereavement suites you talk about now, is that where they can spend more time with the baby?
Yes, right. Which that is the one space.
To say goodbye.
That you'll be with that baby earthside, right? That's your hello and your goodbye.
Right.
And so what do you want that space to feel like?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So is that somewhere where you can invite family up? And
absolutely. Okay. So when I visited the University of Iowa and I said, I want to build these labor and delivery suites, I really expected that they would say, "That's cute, right? But we're at 108% capacity or whatever it is." But they didn't. They actually said, "You're right. We need that here." Because at the time, so this is almost 7 years ago, birthing and bereavement suites didn't exist at all in the United States. Hmm. And so we formed a partnership, set up plans to build this birthing and bereavement suite. And lo and behold, we're still waiting. Obviously, there's been a lot of challenges at the university over the last several years, but we're still waiting to build that particular suite. However, in the meantime, we've built others. So Mercy One Dubuque is complete, and so is Genesis East in Davenport. And what I would say, Gary, is that the Davenport suite is the true model for an OFDU small birthing and bereavement suite. So I joke that it's our double wide. So we take two existing L&Ds, gut the space, and just turn it into a really beautiful, almost like a mini condo, right? So one half is birthing bedroom. The other half is living room, kitchenette, fireplace. Mm. So to your point, whether it's grandma and grandpa, maybe it's your earthly children, whatever it is, everybody can be in that space and not have to leave.
Do you have pictures of that? I know you probably don't today, but they can go on your website
Absolutely.
And see those.
Yes, okay. We do. But the whole idea is that once you're in the space, you don't have to walk down the hall. You don't have to listen to healthy babies cry. Because I'll tell you, when you're talking to a family who's delivered a stillborn baby and that baby is silent, right? But you're listening to all these other babies cry, it's torture.
Yeah. You need to have your own quiet time. You need to be with the baby, your family, your spouse.
And just, this is going to sound a little bit high maintenance. I'm a little bit high maintenance. But that the space smells good, right? It doesn't smell sterile. It doesn't smell like... to have the fireplace so it's warm and cozy and inviting. If the photos you're going to take are in that one space, what does that need to look like?
Yeah.
Right? Can we roll the birthing bed out and have a Murphy bed come down so mom and partner, parents can sleep together in that bed? All of the details are important.
So you're talking in Iowa, you're trying to get that set up, and they've kind of put that on the back burner because of remodel or whatever.
Oh, my gosh. Well, really the biggest – hurdle for any hospital has been the pandemic, right? Mm. So now we're seeing the hospitals come out of crisis and recovering. So I think we can get back to some of those plans. University does have it in the works. It's just, what does that timeline look like and what space specifically in the remodel are we going to take over?
Do you need to raise money for that?
We are working on the budget, so we have some already committed, but we will be raising more. Yes.
How much? What do you
need? We don't know yet because we have to decide on the space.
Half million, million?
I would say 350,000.
Right.
Would be my best guess right now.
And you raise the money, but the hospital lets you have the space, basically, and then you
pay
for
it. Yeah, so it's their space, but
we build it out.
Correct. Help design and fundraise.
So what else is going on? You got the bereavement suite, which I think is just it's a must.
Yes,
it is something nobody talks about. It's part of life.
Yep.
It's going to happen.
Yep.
And it is something that I'm glad you bring it to their attention because obviously for the mother and the spouse,
it's particularly a tough time. Helpless feeling for that spouse, right? We talk about this all the time. Their experience, so we'll say dad's in the room, right? Their experience is totally different, right?
Yeah.
They might lose their wife.
Yeah.
They might lose the mother of their baby. The baby's dying. I mean, it's an entirely different experience for them that I think is often overlooked, right? How do they navigate the grief and then try to support their spouse through their spouse's grief, right? It's a complicated endeavor.
I know it sounds like you have men's groups and women's groups. Yes. Tell me about those groups, what they do, what the focus is.
So what I was sharing with you the other day is that the birthing and bereavement suites are incredibly important. We have got to make this change, right, just for the standard of medical care. But the most important work that I think No Foot Too Small does is caring for the patients when they leave the hospital. And so over the years, we have established what we call moms groups, because I don't want to call them support groups, right? We're just a group of moms getting together. And we've also established the men's social clubs. Again, just a really cool way of saying men's support group, but we're not going to call it that. All of these groups meet in a private room at a restaurant, right, with food and drink. We're coming together as a group of friends, right, not as a group of patients that, you know, that's something wrong with us. So these exist in 9 cities across the state of Iowa.
Does part of your bereavement, just a probably a strange question, as a lady that had a baby like that, do you sit and go, what did I do wrong? Did I eat wrong?
Oh, my goodness.
Did I drink something? And it's just
This is a very vulnerable, honest, example.
Yeah.
I remember looking at Dr. Mawson and saying, was it the nasal spray?
Yeah.
I use nasal spray.
Yeah.
I had a cold, right? Like, I did this.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a skull because I use nasal spray. And she looked at me and she's like, Robin, that is ridiculous. Like, this has nothing to do with the nasal spray.
Right.
Right. But yes, you do. You run through all of these things that I must have done wrong, right? Maybe it was the Diet Coke. Maybe it was the turkey sandwich, the sushi.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's just not happened. So tell us about the angels. Are the babies the angels?
Yes. Yes. So there's three pillars to the mission, and that is to celebrate angels.
Okay.
Those are our babies that we've lost, right?
Okay.
To unite those families. So to host these elaborate programs and events to bring families together to support each other, ultimately, and then to build the birthing and bereavement suites.
So as the mothers are all gathered, you all have a similar experience, right?
Yes.
So you can share things with each other.
And the dads, too.
Right.
I mean, this year alone, we will host 5 golf events, which are a lot of fun. But initially, we were hosting those just to get the dads together, right? Like, how do we get them on a golf cart? They don't have to talk. They don't have to share their story at all. But just to know that they're surrounded with other gentlemen, right, who have experienced something similar.
When you lose a baby, do you think as a mother, you don't want to be around other mothers having babies? You know what I'm saying? It's like, well, so-and-so has 4 children. They're all wonderful. They all, and you know what I mean? I mean, is it psychologically, there's a lot happening there?
Well, so that goes back to my physician saying, for your mental health, you need to get pregnant. So I was very lucky. Most people are not this lucky. I was pregnant again 8 weeks later. But I will tell you, in that 8 weeks, well, 12 weeks before I knew I was pregnant, right? It felt like everybody was pregnant.
Yeah.
People who didn't want to be pregnant were pregnant. I mean, it was torture, right? Because especially for someone who maybe likes a little bit of control, I had no control.
Right.
Right. And so, yes, it is very painful. It's difficult. There's a lot of jealousy and just resentment, quite frankly, for those who don't want to be pregnant. That's all you want.
Did it test your faith? Any faith you want to talk about?
I wouldn't say it tested my faith. I think what it did was it reminded me that even though at the time I was a healthy 30-something, right, I was a contributing member of our society, I was working hard, it meant I was not exempt from heartache or pain.
Right. Probably strengthened your faith, right?
Absolutely.
A lot of people after that would have sat around and been upset or sad, which And then you turned it into an extreme positive.
I just felt like I had a choice. And I remember leaving the hospital thinking, I can wallow in my grief,
right,
or I can choose to live in a way that would honor him. Right. And for me, that was an easy choice.
Right. So this was 13. Yeah. You had your party. Sounds like you had another party.
We had quite a few parties.
You never invited me to your parties.
Oh, you're going to be there this year.
All right, I hope so. So how, tell us how it's grown. Tell us about some of your fundraisers. Talk about what you do today you go through the next 10 years here.
Oh, it was fast and fierce. For those first several years, it was just what we would call now the annual gala. I was meeting with a couple of gentlemen in our community who said, you know, I think you need to add maybe a run or some other event. And I wasn't quite sure I was onto their suggestions. And so I looked to my, at the time, 5-year-old daughter, and she's looking at me. She's like, well, Mom, I don't understand why Beau gets to have so many parties. And I said, well, honey, he only has one every year. Just like you have a birthday party, he has one. And she said, why don't I get to come to Beau's birthday parties? Hmm. I'm like, all right, girlfriend, you're not wrong. And so the second event we had ever added to the calendar is called Blooms and Butterflies. And it is an opportunity for our earthly children to come together and celebrate their angel siblings, right? So in the No For Too Small community, I think all of our children think that everybody has angels, right? Because it is so normal for them to be with hundreds of people who have angel siblings. So Blooms and Butterflies is a very, very special event. But then from there, it went to Angels in the Outfield and then the golf events and so on and so forth. And so this year alone, we will host 15 large-scale events. So when I say large scale, I say the smallest will be about 150 attendees. The largest, which will be Angels in the Outfield, will probably be 2,000. So significant. And then the 90 support groups in 9 cities across the state, as well as all of the virtual groups.
So when did you get out of Medtronics, and then when did you stop March of Dimes?
So as this was growing so quickly, we gave to the March of Dimes for the first 3 years. Hmm. Then we met with the University of Iowa, established really the true mission of No Foot Too Small to celebrate, unite, and build, established our own 501c3. And by the end of 2019, I was truly at a breaking point. I was going to have a nervous breakdown. I had 2 full-time jobs, right, running this organization and running my career with Medtronic. And so I won't cry about it today. When I talk about it, I do often get very choked up. It was a very difficult decision. Obviously gave up a very lucrative lifestyle as well. But I knew that my purpose here was to serve these families, right? And to live in a way that Beau would be proud of. And so December of 19, I resigned from Medtronic. Little did I know that we would take over office space for the first time. I would have any type of salary from No Foot Too Small in January of 2020. And then the world would shut down.
Yeah.
Right?
Pandemic. Here you go.
Oh, my goodness. I sat there. My office is right down the street, and I'm thinking, what did you do, Robin? Yeah. What decision did you just make? But I'll tell you what, those years, 20, 21, 22, we grew and we grew and we grew. Because not only is pregnancy and infant loss difficult in and of itself, but then you throw the pandemic and the isolation on top of it. I was on virtual support group calls with women around the country. So that's the other thing that's really cool about No Foot Too Small is we're serving families in the corridor and across Iowa, but they're dialing in from all over the country, right? So there's women on the East Coast dialing in, delivering their babies. Their husband's not allowed in the room, right? Their husband's in the parking lot while their baby's dying. Incredible.
Really? Why is that? Why are they?
Well, that was the hospital restrictions, right?
Oh, because
during
of COVID.
COVID pandemic. Yeah. Mm. I mean, that was April of 2020. It was probably one of the most difficult virtual calls I'd ever been on. Mm. And just trying to support them through that grief. So we saw tremendous growth 2021, even 22. And that just speaks to the real unmet need out there. This isn't something that's talked about or cared for well.
So name the cities you aren't active in state of Iowa.
We are most active in Iowa City, Cedar Rapids, Des Moines, Davenport, Sioux City, Cedar Falls, and Dubuque, I would say, are our top.
Do you staff the calls, or are you talking to the ladies that are having issues?
It's a little bit of both. So Allie Moss is our director of family support. She is fantastic. She oversees all of our support groups. And then we have a team of about 13 or 14 angel ambassadors. So they are all also lost parents that lean in as volunteers to support all of the families coming in. I would say right now we have somewhere between 5 and 10, we'll call it 7 new families coming into the organization every single day. And so, yes, I am still speaking to some, but we have a much larger team really connecting with all
these
families.
You say 5 to 7 coming in, calling in?
Like
or
coming in through our Facebook page, our website, through various streams, right?
So you started something in Iowa nationwide.
Yes.
There wasn't another organization for this.
I think I might have shared this last week. We had some come in from England. Hmm. We've had Canada. I mean,
really?
It's incredible.
It's amazing. So you've turned a tragedy and a horrific experience in a very...
So here's my question.
Yeah.
We need to scale, right? Like we're scaling nationally. And so I'm just always looking for that right mentor, coach to help us do that successfully. Because while I'm proud of the growth, I want to continue to be able to serve these families, right, in a responsible, quality way. But we have to be able to match the fundraising, right? We can't continue offering all these programs and services without sufficient funding. And so that is what I, more behind the scenes now, I'm really trying to navigate as we maintain this rapid growth.
Have you ever spoke nationally? Have you ever met like in Cincinnati and everybody comes into kind of like a
So I have
convention
spoken or? A few times at a national AMGO meeting. So it's administrators for OB-GYN departments for the top teaching institutions. Mm-hmm. Which is always a fantastic opportunity, and I learn probably as much from them as they learn from me. But then we are also driving interest in birthing and bereavement suites, right, in all of those institutions as well.
Is it something that women that are pregnant should know that you have this available to them?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, right. I mean, because it could happen. Nobody wants to talk about it. And it's a horrific, and you wait a minute, I'm naming it, whatever. And all of a sudden, you know you have an avenue if something like that, a tragedy would happen. I think that's an incredible tool.
So that is also, you know, part of the plan this year is how do we better
let people know?
Let people know that we're here because right now we're not doing any paid advertisements, no paid social media boosts. Everything that's happening is organic, which is what is so beautiful, I think, about the organization is that it has just grown organically out of that need. But I know that there are so many more families who need us.
All private funding, nothing from the Fed, state, nothing.
Nothing.
Hospitals, you just put it out, the word out.
So I was sharing with you that our budget this year is about $1.5 million. Our average gift, our average donation is $100. So that speaks to the volume, right, of gifts coming in. But it also says it is our young families. It is our young families in their 20s and 30s supporting the mission because we've taken care of them. And that's where I worry, is this sustainable, right? When will we, you know— secure those larger gifts that propel us forward so that we are not relying on our young families.
How much do you need to raise a year?
This year, at least $1.5 million, if not $2 million.
Right. And then part of that goes to bereavement suites, part of
all the support
staff
groups,
the phones, support groups, all that stuff.
Right now, our growth is 25% to 30% year over year.
Wow. It's just
exploding. I'm told that the trajectory can't continue that way. And I'm like, watch.
So are you here in an office space in town?
Or? We are. So our office is just down the street, Fifth Avenue.
Okay.
Yes, and that is expanding as well.
So what else do you need? You obviously need money.
Yeah.
Do you need staff? Do you need more volunteers? What else do you need?
Yes. So we will be hiring some more staff. We need more staff on the family support side. We have never had a development person, so you're looking at her. I do need to hire a director of development. We need administration, operations. We need a lot,
right.
Frankly. We're relying on a lot of volunteers.
And it's a grassroots campaign. I mean, you don't have – it's just through word of mouth.
Well, I always say I didn't set out to do this.
I know.
I really didn't. I'm proud of where it is at today, but I did not set out to do this.
Where do you see it 10, 20 years from now?
Oh,
have you thought down that far?
Yes. Down? We will be nationwide.
Nationwide.
Yep. This year, actually, I can say this now. I signed the MOU last week with Nebraska.
Really?
So we're moving into Nebraska to build a birthing and bereavement suite there.
In Omaha?
In Omaha. Yep. Mm-hmm. UNMC.
Okay.
which means we'll also start launching our events and our support groups and all of those things there as well. So
you're going to need a private plane to fly around to all the events.
You're on to me. I do.
And all the golf tournaments.
Yeah.
And so it's amazing.
I appreciate it.
What other things do you have to, would you like to talk about? We got fundraisers. We got events.
We have a lot of events this year. If there's anyone listening who has not been, whether or not you've experienced loss, come join us. I promise you it's a different experience. Our gala is my very favorite. And I know there's a lot of galas and a lot of events out there. I'd like to believe ours is different.
What do you do? Do you auction things off the gala?
We auction things off, but we tell stories, right? It is a night of extreme laughter, right? There are tears, but it's this roller coaster of emotions, and it is just beautiful. And keep in mind, the first pillar of our mission is to celebrate. So our goal is to have a heck of a time, right? It's a fun night. Plus, I love getting dressed up and doing all the fancy things. So gala is pretty great. A lot of folks on the team would tell you our golf events are their favorite. It's not your typical golf event. So we're out there having a lot of fun on the course as well. If you are a lost family, attending the Blooms and Butterflies events or Angels in the Outfield, those events are so great because it's not just about mom and dad. It's not just about the earthly children. But when you have friends, neighbors, aunts, uncles, cousins who don't know how to support you, inviting them into an event like that is healing for them too, right? Because we have to remember that our support network often feels very helpless. So come out, join us for the events. They're really a great time.
Do you have things special for the kids?
Yes. So Blooms and Butterflies.
Okay.
What I will say is so special about that particular event is that we end the evening, so at dusk, at sunset, every earthly child releases a monarch butterfly in honor of their angel sibling.
Right? That's really
so cool. They have all the children's activities, all the things, but that's just really kind of the highlight of the evening.
And when's your gala?
This year is November 16th, here at the Coralville Hyatt.
At the Hyatt. Okay.
Yep.
How many people do you think?
Last year was 750.
Really?
Which is capacity for the room unless I move us into the exhibit hall. If we do that, we'll need some help with pipe and drape and all the things because that will be an incredible expense to add to the event. But I would anticipate more than 1,000 attendees.
Do you have a band or anything, music?
We're working on that too.
Right, because it sounds like you got enough there to have some really fun things going on.
Bring somebody in from Nashville.
Money, and you raise money.
Yeah.
Huh. Wow. So what's it look like if you go national 10, 15, 20 years ago? Do you have this huge staff? You have this... I don't know. You tell me.
That's exactly what I'm trying to figure out, right? There are so many different models for what that could look like. But maintaining the quality of this organization is most important to me, right? So figuring out how do we structure and grow and hire staff around the country and maintain the quality that I would want for this organization.
Is one way to grow it is talk to the hospitals, the major hospitals?
Yes, and that already doing. So an example would be Duke. Right. I've met with Duke several times. They want 3 birthing and bereavement suites. But then we're looking at $1 million just for construction. Right. So now we need to get staff there. We need to get programs, events there. So what I will say about those top teaching institutions, while they see the greatest fetal demise, they're the most difficult to navigate. Right. Because there are so many levels. Right. So it takes a long time. Incredible institutions. But to move the needle takes quite a bit of work. Patience.
So when's your golf tournament? You said you had 5.
We do. So they're around the state. The Iowa City event, the Golf Classic, is August 9th this year. 8th or 9th.
Is it Finkbein?
So we host Finkbein and Brown Deer simultaneously.
Oh, really?
So we'll sell out both courses, and then all foursomes will meet at Back Pocket for the post party.
Oh, I bet that's fun. A lot of golf tournaments going on this year, but those are great causes. Yeah. What else can you tell us about No Foot Too Small? Anything that comes to mind?
Just that I'm so grateful for all of the staff and volunteers who've leaned in, really, to make this organization possible, right? Like, I'm always the one here in front of the camera answering the questions, but the reality is there's an incredible team behind me making all of this possible.
So you took an incredible tragedy, I don't know what you call it, just – happening in your life, and you've turned it into an incredible positive.
I'm honestly so grateful for Bo, right? Like, he changed my life. He's changing many other lives.
Right.
When we talk about our earthly children, I think that this experience changes who they become, right? Like suddenly they understand loss, they understand death and grief, all of those things. And so they become more compassionate partners, friends, spouses, right?
Yeah.
I think Bo was an incredible gift.
Because a lot of kids early on, they don't, there isn't a loss.
No.
Like maybe grandma and grandpa or whoever,
right,
when they're a little older.
Yep.
But to be a small child and say, you know, my brother's not coming home, how do they get through that?
Absolutely.
So it affects everybody.
Yep.
Grandparent, like you said, relatives. And that's why those bereavement suites to me is a really, really cool idea.
Yep.
I think that's a great thing.
Thank
so
you.
What keeps you up at night?
Oh, well, that's a loaded question.
I know.
Really, No for Too Small is my heart and soul, right? It is rooted in my heart. And so what keeps me up is just figuring out how do we sustain this growth? I mean, I've said this a few times, right? It's just how do we sustain and maintain the quality as we do this? Because it's not going to slow down, right? When folks look at me and say, Robin, you can't maintain that trajectory, I look at them and say, pregnancy and infant loss is not going to stop, right?
No.
We can't fix that. And so what's going to happen is that as the word gets out about No Foot Too Small, we're going to continue to grow quickly.
Are there numbers on it with premature deaths?
Well, 1 in 4 pregnancies alone will end in loss.
Really?
Right? So that's, yes, 1 in 4.
Oh.
Which is why this is so common and so disturbing that it's not talked about. Because there are more people experiencing loss than anybody here probably realizes.
And it includes SIDS, miscarriage, and
no, that doesn't even include SIDS numbers. That's above and beyond that.
Really?
Right, yes. So that's just 1 in 4 every pregnancy.
So it's something that needs to be addressed. You're doing it.
Yep.
Do you think eventually you have a hotline? Sounds kind of strange, but like
you know, nobody's ever asked me about a hotline, but we are actually looking right now at a business plan that would bring on licensed therapists, right? Because the reality is we're a very peer-based model. So it's lost mom or lost dad talking to lost mom or lost dad.
Right.
But there are times we get very worried about some of the folks we're talking to, and it's probably time to also bring on therapists. So you know what? That's not so far off.
Anyway.
Or could be.
So what are you most proud of?
Well, I'm most proud of Bo. I'm most proud of him saying, hey, mom, I've got a job for you.
Go do this.
Yeah.
And you did it. It was a great calling.
Yeah. Got a lot more gray hair these days.
Yeah,
but
I don't see any gray hair.
No.
Well, Robin, I'll tell you what. Anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
Just thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for giving this a voice.
No, thank you for what you do. It's amazing.
I appreciate it.
You've turned a negative situation into a huge positive. Yeah. You're making a difference with all these folks, families, children, spouses, women. You got great events going on, and I think everybody listening needs to get out and support you.
Thank you.
So I hopefully they will. So
and I'll see you at Gala.
Yeah,
maybe
I'll definitely be there. I'll have a front row seat. Maybe get me in front.
So. All right.
Anyway, thanks again for coming in, Robin.
Thank you.